everyone, and welcome to edition number 4 of New Thought on the News. I'm Barbara Fields, Executive Director of the Association for Global New Thought, the organization that brings you this series on the third Thursday of every month at this time. To those of you who have been following this series so far, welcome back. And to those joining us for the first time, we're glad to have you with us, because New Thought on the News has really stimulated some incredible dialogue and food for new thought that you can now be a part of. So the first thing it is my pleasure to do is to introduce you to today's panelists. First is Barbara Marks Hubbard, who is president of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, a pioneer of conscious evolution, author, speaker, social innovator, and my dear friend. She is a world-renowned visionary futurist, an evolutionary educator, and inspiring speaker. Barbara is the author of 7 acclaimed books that communicate the new worldview of conscious evolution. She is co-founder and chair of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, and additionally co-founded many progressive organizations, including the Association for Global New Thought, as well as the World Future Society. In 1984, many of you know, her name was placed in nomination for the Vice Presidency of the United States on the Democratic ticket with the campaign theme, To Fulfill the Dream, a campaign for a positive future. She is currently co-producing with the Shift Network a global multimedia event. Well, this was last year, Birth 2012, we better update your bio, co-creating a planetary shift in time. And that unified many people worldwide in a heart coherence and social synergy to birth a new evolved era and a universal humanity. You can find out a lot more about Barbara's organization at evolve.org. Hi, B1, Barbara Marks Hubbard. How are you doing?
Hi there. I am really, you know, whenever I hear my own bio, I get tired.
I know the feeling, but we need to update
it. It's a long journey, but, you know, yeah, not even updating it, but all those things.
I know. Well, you've been working hard for the past 80
yeah,
years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I have. But anyway, I'm very glad to be on this call.
So secondly, I'd like to introduce you to Reverend Wendy Craig Purcell, who is founder and CEO of the Unity Center, a 1,500-member spiritual community in San Diego. As Leadership Council member and Vice President of the Association for Global New Thought, Wendy served as convener of 3 synthesis dialogues with His Holiness the Dalai Lama and traveled to Istanbul, Turkey, in planning for the Abraham Path Initiative, an AGNT partnership with the Harvard Negotiation Project, to open up a pilgrimage route in the Middle East, retracing the footsteps of the prophet Abraham. With a strong interest in spiritually motivated social action, Wendy and the Unity Center were instrumental in the early formation of the San Diego Department of Peace Grassroots Group. That initial group, Americans for the Department of Peace, now encompasses all of Southern California, with the Unity Center providing ongoing support. She is author of Ask Yourself This, Questions to Open the Heart, Expand the Mind, and Awaken the Soul. Unity Center leads Travel with a Purpose tours, focusing on adventure, culture, and sacred service, and also operates, in fact, I think the grand opening is this weekend, one of the largest fair trade boutiques in Southern California. The Unity Center website is theunitycenter.net. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Barbara. It's a joy to be with my 2 favorite Barbaras on the planet and to get into our conversation tonight, presenting a new thought on the news. It's just a joy to be with you once again.
Great, thanks. I always like to take just 1 minute to introduce the community, people who have come on the lines. We're going to turn on your mics for a moment, and on the count of 3, I'd like you to speak your name and say hello into the whole group, because even though we won't be able to hear everything, it will definitely establish the field of our collective presence here today in this space. So I hope our navigators are ready to go here. And I'm going to count to 3. 1, 2, 3.
Hi,
this
is Nikki.
Blessings.
It's joy to be here.
Let's go.
Well, that sounds like a good group, a lively group. Okay, so now I'd like to center us in this space as we begin our series work here, asking Barbara and Wendy to lead us in with a blessing.
I'd be happy to. And so I just invite us, you know, to step aside from the actual news that maybe we've been preoccupied with over these last few weeks, from the civil war in Syria to the recent shootings at the U.S. Naval base to maybe personal problems at home that we're dealing with. And so I just invite us to set that aside right now and to join with me in taking a deep, peaceful collective breath within as we just pause right here and right now. As we pause together to focus our attention within and to shift our attention from the world of effect that can be so challenging and confusing to the truth, the absolute truth of our oneness. The absolute truth that good is ever present and is trying to emerge and is actually calling all conscious beings forward at this powerful, important, and critical time in our collective history. And so let's join together in relaxing into that truth, that calling, here and now, together, acknowledging and affirming and bringing forward individually and collectively the divine that is in us, has always been in us, and always will be. Recognizing together that these outer conditions are evolutionary drivers, molding and shaping and bringing forth a new, a radically new humanity that can create a new world that truly does work for all. And so we listen together today. We listen deeply to that which is ours to do and be and bring forth, so that that world that works for everyone, can come to pass. And I give thanks for this time together. I give thanks for this idea called A New Thought on the News. I give thanks for each and every one of us lending our mind, our heart, our soul, our conscious energy into this collaborative, co-creative time together. So it is.
And Barbara, would you like to say something?
I am really considering the nature of evolution itself at times of crisis leads to radical newness. And the emergent properties of what is new, let's say from the most intelligent animal to the earliest human, or the earliest human to Homo sapiens sapiens, or where we are right now to whatever is coming, it's extremely hard to actually see what's new because it's actually new. And I see what's happened, one of the things that's happened with the spread of the mass media is the news itself is reactive to the old. And it is insensitive to the emergent reality of the new. It's almost as though it has no eyes to see it, no ears to hear it. And the internet and social media is fragmented with so many impulses, some of them new, some of them old. But what I'm seeing here in new thought on the news, if I take it really deeply, new thought is the genuine news of that which we are creating in alignment with the Creator, that which is being created through the source of our being, which is the creative intention of Universal Creator. And by coming out into the public with new thought, taken really literally here now as thought that is coming from the emergent properties of the creative intention of the universe, which is in every one of us, to see it manifesting in form and actually catching the pattern of the new could be one of the most important things that we can do, because seeing is believing. Knowing that something is possible and happening makes it happen more. So I just affirm this purpose tonight and place it in the context of the genuine emergence of a new era of evolution, that we are, as new thought, able to see it anew.
That's beautiful. Thank you, both of you. You know, it reminds me of being on a stage with Dr. Michael Beckwith at Morehouse College some years ago, and he was trying to describe this phenomenon, and at one point he just said to the audience, people, if it's really new, it's going to be a surprise. This is one of my favorite Michael Beckwith quotes.
Yes, exactly. And so what's being called the news is actually not that at all. Also, I think we have a filter of an infantile nervous system that has disempathitis like a baby who can only cry or put itself to sleep. We have a mass media that is so sensitive to where something could make you cry or make you go to sleep, that it has completely exaggerated what's happening. It's as if the baby could only feel what hurts. Yes, these things are hurting, but it doesn't see what's growing. So this is a very serious potential that we're dealing with here by actually experiencing this together.
Yes, absolutely. And I'd like to lead us into our what we're calling a panel discussion on these issues. And in order to do that, I'd like to take just a moment to set the stage, to give some context for people who haven't been with us before about this new program, this program we're engaged in, because New Thought on the News is for spiritual beings who are very much concerned about and engaged in the real stories and circumstances that appear in our mainstream media every day. Spirituality based on the principles of New Thought is the foundation of our worldview, and we strive sincerely to connect these principles with our understanding of real-time events, whether they are taking place in our families, our communities, our nation, or in our world as a whole. But we all need support in this journey because, overwhelmingly, as Barbara just pointed out, the news of the day is bad news. It's sensational and violent, filled with problems that we are told do not have solutions, or at least not ones within our grasp. So no wonder so many of us struggle with depression, fear, or even apathy in the face of these odds. So New Thought on the News is here to remind us that this hopeless story we are presented with is not the truth, but only one interpretation severely jaded by a corporate media's mandates on what news they want us to hear. You, I, and our presenters today are here to collaborate and support one another in our choice to look at current events according to the spiritual principles that transcend the story that's being told by these merchants of doom and greed. We're not here on the third Thursday of each month to simply pretend that all is well, or that the very real and critical issues facing the world today are to be minimized or ignored as we meditate in some magical universe of denial. We are here to take responsibility as spiritually motivated citizens and to find realistic ways to engage with these issues. This is the only way we can become the agents of positive change we know ourselves to be, and to lead others into doing the same. So what I'd like to do now is start with Wendy and then ask Barbara the same question, to present in your words a general vision or a theory of why and how New Thought spiritual principles can reframe this dialogue on world events in the news. Wendy, would you like to begin?
Sure. Well, you know, it's been said that New Thought is the evolutionary edge of religion itself, and I think that that's a very accurate statement. And you see, our teachings in New Thought, when we actually practice them and live them, have the ability to absolutely change consciousness. We all know that we can't solve the problems that we're experiencing in the world today at the same level of consciousness that created them. And so when we talk about these practices that we embody in New Thought, these practices help us to dispel the fear that is such a normal reaction to the news that we hear. Our practices help us to dispel that fear and silence the distracting chatter of confusion so we can get some clarity, so that we can open a new way for creativity and for a lasting solution to emerge, because there are solutions to the problems that we face in the world. We simply have to approach the news, the current events, from a spiritual perspective. I can't emphasize that enough. We have to approach the news from a spiritual perspective and a spiritual practice that not only awakens consciousness, but engages us in mature, responsible spiritual action. You see, the perspective that comes out of a spiritual practice is a different perspective than the one that comes out of race consciousness. We know that how we see a problem is one of the biggest parts of the problem itself. My practice teaches me to always look within, to be responsible, and to take action from a calm, centered, connected place. And so as I listen to the news, I need to be asking myself at least these three important questions. I need to be asking myself, what is the spiritual truth that I'm being challenged to remember in this? What is the spiritual truth that I'm being challenged to remember in whatever it is I'm hearing? Secondly, what am I being challenged to practice? It's not just enough to remember. What am I being challenged to practice in my daily interactions as I go about the world in which I live? What am I being challenged to practice at this time? And thirdly, what action can I take to make even a small positive difference? When we ask ourselves those kinds of questions in response to whatever it is we're hearing on the news that can be frightening or downright depressing, when we challenge ourselves to ask those kinds of questions, we will not be apathetic. We will be able to stay centered and focused, and we'll be able to take positive action.
That really is saying a lot. B1, Barbara, I know that, you know, you've been thinking about this question about the new news and these transformative practices and reinterpretations of the circumstances that are being framed to us. That's been your life's work for such a long time, and I know that you've got some thoughts to share about the vision that this brings forth for you.
Well, you know, I come from, I would call, an evolutionary perspective, and I see things with evolutionary eyes, which certainly are related to New Thought, but have a particular quality. Evolutionary eyes are able to take an overview perspective and see the process as a whole. And so when I hear any type of news, the first thing I do, like it takes me maybe 1 minute, is I go to the origin of creation, to the mind of God, and I quickly see the labor of love of all those billions of years of quarks and electrons and protons and billions of galaxies and so forth. It's a labor of love toward beings ever more capable of knowing the creative intention within themselves and doing it. And then a second thing I see is every problem is an evolutionary driver. Problems exist, stress exists, in order to press evolution toward a higher level of expression of love, creativity, wholeness, and oneness. I find that in my own personal life, if I have a problem, a crisis of some sort, I immediately say, what is this driving me toward? And inevitably, it is. Now, when I look at a much larger world, let's say what's happening in the news now with, let's say, Syria particularly, what is this driving us toward? And you see the almost ludicrous efforts of top-down leadership to manipulate in order not to destroy the world. But I had a talk with James O'Dea just yesterday, a bonus call for my Generation One course, and he gave a completely new thought version of the news. He said, this is so amazingly good that the peace movement and the public desire against the use of force, even within the U.S. Congress and all around the world, has been so great that even though Obama had to threaten force to some degree, he said that's not what did it. It simply was no longer possible for Assad to continue, and the way he gave up those weapons supposedly toward the United Nations and signed that treaty, which he'd been fighting against for so long, the way James interpreted this was, from the whole system shift point of view, that the entire peace movement had begun to shift the system. That isn't to say that this will surely work this way, but he said you have to have the mystical understanding, the understanding of cosmogenesis, and you will see that something new is happening, because the speed with which that decision started to fall into place, if it did, and I haven't seen it today, but suddenly Assad is giving up his weapons and signing it over. He said, do you know what that is? It came from his father, and it came from all thousands of people who had been killed, and that it happened like that. So what he saw was the driver of the destruction, of the mass movement of people like ourselves who don't show up in the news, having an immense effect on changing the situation. So it's really important to be able to see the effect of your own emergence, because it doesn't show up in the newspaper, it doesn't show up on TV, but because he's right in it with his whole course on peace ambassadors and training thousands of people to actually go out and be the change. So here's another part that's really very much connected to New Thought, is that when you see a crisis and you look for what's emerging and you see that there's a peace movement emerging, there's a desire not to use war, etc., then the more you become an expression of that peace yourself, and put that in your attitude, in all your comments, you actually are having a far greater effect than you know, because the general tendency of evolution is to higher order, greater consciousness, greater freedom. So you feel yourself pushed through a huge pattern of the divine process of creation when you go that way, so you don't feel ineffective. No matter what, you don't feel ineffective, because you know the greater pattern is in the direction you're going. So I have found that by doing this, that I actually always seeing what's breaking through out of what's breaking down. And I'm always therefore communicating more of what's breaking through. And by communicating it, you get in communion with it. So instead of saying, oh my God, isn't it terrible, look what just happened, you'll say, oh, do you feel what's breaking through here? And say that. There's a lot about just what we're doing on this New Thought on the news. Is, yes, you can interpret it very, very realistically, like James O'Dea did, but what you don't see, except through New Thought in the truly evolutionary sense of it, is what's emergent out of what's breaking down. That's the news.
Thanks, Barbara. I'm in a minute. I'm going to ask you to just keep going and continue into the discussion, because you had prepared some remarks about Egypt, Syria, and emerging democracy. But before we go right into that part of the discussion, I was thinking that we might ask our listeners for comments or questions, not on specific topics at this point, but on whether or not they've had experience with interpreting the news through the lens of spiritual principles, and perhaps maybe some anecdotes about what kind of effect that's had on their lives. Is there anyone who, by pressing one on their telephone keypad, would like to share a kind of a general perspective or question about this orientation? Because if not, then we're just going to move on into our topics right now. Lynn, would you like to speak?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, I think it's just an incredible time on the planet. And like Barbara was saying, without the chaos that people are finally getting asked to speak up and have their opinions, they're being invited into or forced into, I guess, conversation and platforms. They've never been at that level that the individual is asking, you know, people are being asked to speak up so that we can stop the wars and communicate and use our technology and co-create, you know, heaven on earth. So I think it's an incredible time to be here. Thank you and bless you all so much.
Thank you, Lynn. Joy Sender, did you have a quick comment or question before we move forward?
Spending time watching how what appeared to be that we were going to go to war, to the fear that developed that the United States might attack, to Russia becoming involved. I worked for 7.5 years with alcoholics and always was concerned about motivation, what made people stop drinking. And it was without exception fear. We do not want to annihilate ourselves and our planet. It is that fear, I think, which is a driving force that we very visibly now have come to the point where people are more and more aware. It is the people saying, we don't want war. And it's rising up in other countries. And with that, the leaders are taking note. And I think it's very visible that there are effects taking place in our history right now. And for this, I am most grateful. And may there be many more.
Thank you, Joyce. I have had that same optimistic point of view lately myself, and I know that it begins with our vision that the change is so. And I actually feel very heartened. There are many complicated reasons why these decisions are made or turn around in midstream. Many of them are not quite so generous, I would say, as what we're attributing right now. But I do think that the times that we're in and the voices of people who are so connected by technology that they can actually have a voice in some way in global government, that this is slowly but surely having an effect on us. So at this point, I would like to ask you, Barbara, to continue on some of the thoughts that you have been preparing about Syria and emerging democracy and our part in it. Would you like to do that for a few minutes?
I will, and just to make one comment that's important. I've been reading a book called, it's Our Better Angels. It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And this Steven Pinker did a very serious study of violence throughout, from Homer and the Greeks and the Romans and the early medieval periods and so forth. And he has found statistically violence is diminishing. which is just an interesting thing, particularly in terms of one person destroying another, even including the Second World, the two world wars, and Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that there is a rise in humanity itself against direct violence. And I think what the listener just said is true. The uprising against war, I remember Robert Mueller saying at the beginning of the peace movement, he said, "Do you realize how new it is for there to be a peace movement?" Until the Second World War, everyone thought war was what people did. People went to war. They went with banners and they wore helmets, you know, they wore feathers and they sung and they played and they were the heroes. In Greece, every mother sent her husband or her son to war. So we have a movement here that never existed before en masse in history. So I just want to say that that is now having an effect, and it has more of an effect than we know, because it doesn't show up in the daily news as it is being constructed, but it does show up in the New Thought news. And I think we need to, as we develop this type of show, to really start noticing and ask people to notice what's emergent that's creative, whether it be in their own life, in the social, in their local communities, or in the world, until we can have a massive display of the emerging world. And you know, Barbara, that's been one of my greatest purposes, is what I called, when I ran for vice president, a peace room as sophisticated as a war room. And the war room maps breakdowns and enemies and how to defeat them, and a peace room maps breakthroughs and how to connect them and communicate them. Just that little shift. And I'm determined before I go is that we're going to have a peace room as sophisticated as a war room. And now we can do it on internet. And the main thing about our world right now is, who are the leaders? I'm not sure that it's the one that we used to call leaders. I actually feel we're the leaders, but we have to know that's true. So I just did want to say that one thing about not specifically the solutions in Egypt, Syria, and other parts of what the Arab Spring, but the real challenge of democracy itself, because there's no doubt that liberal democracy was a great advance over monarchy. It is, and it still is, just about the best system that we know, yet it's not working almost anywhere. It's very interesting, because our liberal democracy here has become so oppositional and so controlled by larger corporate interests that it is almost impossible to govern. Somebody said that if the Dalai Lama were president, there would be very little that he could do. And so you can see what I call the principle of rising impotence. The higher up you go, the harder it is to make a change. Look at the Vatican, one of the greatest top-down structures in the world. And I happen to spend a lot of time with evolving nuns who are very forward-looking and moving straight ahead into the future, while the so-called leadership is blocking it in every way. And so I have a question here of the evolution of democracy. If it's not at the top-down structure, and even those uprisings where they try for democracy, it basically is a win-lose form of self-governance. And every problem we have in the world requires a whole system approach, whether it be environment or health or education. The whole child, the whole environment, the whole of each person. So I am proposing that we are already developing a new form of democracy, which could be called synergistic democracy, cooperative democracy, and that this is existing everywhere beneath the surface and a lot on the internet, where people are collaborating everywhere. And I really look that is where the leadership exists, a and one more degree of conscious connectivity of that which is emergent and wants to cooperate, one more degree of that, and I believe you would see the beginning of cooperative democracy in the through the people, not at the level of the top of any existing structure. But I think when that constituency actually learns to do one more step of synergistic convergence and collaboration for these large issues, that you will see that a constituency has been formed that might possibly create a more cooperative democracy.
And I feel as if we're on the learning curve of that even now, even as we speak. I mean, I, for example, am sitting in front of a computer screen where on this Maestro call, I see the names of all the people who are here with us on the call, and I see how we're interacting with our ideas, and it occurs to me that this little space with all of you pictured in my computer is a peace room. It's a peace room. And
a peace room, that's right.
Exactly. And there's so many peace rooms happening right now, because if there's actually going to be a substantial qualitative change in the system of governance, which means also redefining the principle of leadership from a hierarchical one to whatever it is evolving into, and I agree with you, it's more panarchical. There's a democratic aspect to it that involves all voices, but it's not anarchy. There needs to be a leadership principle.
No,
it
it's
just
synarchy.
Doesn't need to be one person.
Right. Just one evolutionary observation is if you think how nature has gone up the chain of entropy, disorder, for billions of years, every single time when it gets to a point of almost total breakdown, it jumps to synergy or new whole systems greater than the sum of their parts. And I would like just to hold here that we as on planet Earth are right at the threshold of a new whole system made up of all the points of people who are already shifting. I mean, we're all here.
We're all here. I hope that the people listening will hold on to this question, because we'll be having a chance in a few minutes to discuss it in small groups. But I also wanted to just to further the dialogue, and now that we've sort of unrolled some of the principles of emerging democracy, I know that Wendy has some thoughts about the style of democracy that depends on the fact that we have and can make some new economic choices, and that there are new opportunities that can enhance our power as a people that can help us to break out into empowerment but out of the old system. And I thought that was sort of a fascinating topic, because it answers Barbara's question in some ways: what does the new form of democracy, the emerging democracy, look like? So I thought, Wendy, that you might share with us about that for a little while.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, Barbara was talking about liberal democracy and our collective voices and recognizing what's trying to emerge. And I think that there's also that we have to look at many different layers of how this plays out. You know, democracy at its core gives everyone a say in how they're governed. It allows for everyone's voice and interests and needs to at least be heard, and then for the majority to set the course for all when it's working well. That's the theory behind it. And so democracy can bring fairness and equality. It can help to bring that. But I say it helps because it alone, even the most, I think, emergent form of democracy alone, is not enough to deal with the challenges that operate on many different levels throughout our human family. I'm convinced that besides an individual's voice being heard, that people need real choices in economic opportunities here at home and throughout the world. I believe that poverty really is the single most important common denominator to the major problems we face today. If we peel them apart and we look beneath the effect of the serious problems, whether we're looking at the civil war in Syria or the spread of terrorism or the rise of human trafficking and modern-day slavery, we have to recognize the very real role that poverty plays. Impoverished people do not see the world through the same emergent eyes that we're talking about right now. It's not that they can't, but it's that they're stuck in the mindset and the world in which they have been born and lived and are dealing with struggles that most of us here in our world can barely wrap our arms around. Poverty is not so much a lack of resources as it is a lack of access. Access to choice and access to opportunity. You know, I think I've been in metaphysics now as a minister for 33 years and as a student of it for almost 40 years. And I've seen us evolve and mature a bit in New Thought, and I'm glad, because I think at times we've been rather smug in New Thought, suggesting to the world's poor that if you just change your thinking, you won't be poor anymore. When in reality, according to many recent studies, poverty itself causes a tremendous amount of stress, which actually decreases one's cognitive abilities, which means that that individual's ability to use the very New Thought principles that we know can change their lives, their ability to use them is effectively diminished. There's a lot of wisdom and truth to the concepts in Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. When somebody is struggling in a subsistence level existence, we need to reach back and through in a different way while still looking forward and within to what's emerging. And so I'm a very practical person, and like many people in New Thought, I'm always wanting to know, What can I do to make a difference in making the world a better, safer, and more just place for all? Because poverty is a common denominator to so many of the world's problems, I think that one of the most powerful things those of us in the consciousness movement can do is to use our money in a much more conscious and socially responsible way. You know, every day we vote. Every day we vote. We don't always vote consciously, but every day we vote with our dollars for the kind of world we're going to live in and leave behind. That's powerful. And so what can we do? If you have mutual funds, be sure that yours are ones that are socially responsible. Did you know that in 1995 there were only 55 mutual funds that engaged in socially responsible investing, and they had $12 billion in assets at that time, but now there are 493 socially responsible investment funds with assets of almost $570 billion. That's a shift. It's representing the desire in our hearts to create a world that is more just and fair for everyone. If you have money in a CD earning dismal returns, which most of us do, consider moving it into a company called OicoCredit. OicoCredit's a worldwide financial cooperative that promotes global justice by empowering disadvantaged people with credit, with microfinance loans. They've enabled socially conscious investors to invest easily in microfinance institutions and trade cooperatives and fair trade organizations, making a difference in the lives of the poor and the disenfranchised in 67 countries around the world. They've been around for over 35 years and are over $700 million strong. Again, speaking to what is moving in the minds and hearts of people who are consciously awakening and wanting to be responsible. We could join the growing number of shoppers globally who are willing to pay more to buy their products from socially responsible companies. According to Nielsen's Global Corporate Citizenship Survey, nearly half of shoppers worldwide are willing to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to supporting socially responsible businesses. As simple as this, if you drink coffee, be willing to pay a little more and make sure it's fair trade coffee and look for other fair trade food items. The Christmas season is coming upon us. Make a decision to buy only fair trade gift items and empower women in need and change lives around the world. Our spiritual community has shifted our bookstore and done almost away with books into developing a fair trade boutique so we can partner with impoverished artisans around the world to help them change their lives. The point being, I think we need to operate from both ends of the spectrum. I think we need to be aware and sensitive to what is emergent and work to bring that forth, while at the same time never forgetting that those concepts can be pretty hard if you're a mother struggling with how to feed your children and having to make some of the really tough choices that many people in the world have to make today. I think the new thought perspective is to recognize that we operate at both ends of that spectrum.
Thank you, Wendy. In fact, even beyond compassion and support for impoverished and underserved human beings, the idea of creating a new democracy by being more conscious of voting with our dollars has the potential to impact the entire governing system based on economics, which has gone wrong. So I think that this is, I'm sure that Barbara has a comment that she'd like to weigh in on here, but it's a very complex discussion, and I think that we've surfaced some really important points. B1, did you want to say a few words before we moved into the small groups? Thank you, Wendy. That was really very informative.
Wendy, that is so true, and I'll just give one little example. I was recently with my daughter Alexandra, who is fighting for the wildlife in Canada against the fish farms. And when the fish farms develop those salmon within the ocean itself, they contaminate the sea and they infect the salmon, and then the mothers eat the salmon. It's very serious. Gets into the breast milk and so on. So she, after trying, she said she gave up on trying to persuade the government or the corporations. She said it's all about society. And as an example, if people in California simply bought 2% less farmed fish in contrast to wild salmon, that corporations would fail. And so along with our voting and our investing is also simply exactly as you say, what you buy. But Alex is going to be on 60 Minutes, and she's going to make this case. And it's really nice to pick some very specific issues, which I'll just mention, which is buy only a wild salmon. Because if you do, you may actually change the entire situation which government and corporations are holding on to.
And Barbara, I think another piece of it, especially for those of us who are making these kinds of lifestyle changes, that we can take it to the next level and use the power of our voice to share what it is that we're doing with others and to help increase the number of people within our own spheres who begin to make similar kinds of life-changing choices.
Absolutely, that's true.
We're going to get information out to our network about that 60 Minutes program, Barbara, when you have it. But speaking of using our voice and sharing with others, I think it would be time. I bet you that you've all been incubating some ideas listening to these two great women share with you. And so now we'll put you into some breakout groups, so that you can discuss these questions and insights that have come up for you in the conversation so far. most of you are familiar with Maestro small groups. When the bell rings, an announcement will be made that you're in your breakout group. In order to easily facilitate yourselves, you can just, since you can't see each other, you can start by going around and introducing yourself and where you're from by first name. And then, in other words, facilitate yourself by who alphabetically comes up as the first name after you know who's in the group. and just take a minute or two to share your thoughts with each other. The only other time a bell will ring will be halfway through the breakout session, just to let you know that you've got about half as much time to go. And then a bell will ring a second time just before the session is ending. So halfway through, we'll give you a signal, and then we'll give you a bell when the session is ending. So as soon as our engineers are ready, you'll be in your breakout groups. Well, thanks, everyone. I hope you had good discussions. Probably a lot of really good thoughts were exchanged, and we'll continue them. Right now, we're just a minute over the top of the hour, and we want to extend to you just a few thoughts from Barbara Marks Hubbard and Wendy Craig Purcell. Basically, you know, some inspirational thoughts for continuing our work and a couple of concluding remarks, and then we'll be pretty much done. Barbara or Wendy?
I'll start, me too. I want to just alert everyone to the planetary timing that we're on as we're starting this new news, this spirit-based news, because it is said by space scientists and environmental scientists that we're in a very short time frame to change our mind, or in Irvin Laszlo's terms, become a failed species due to the environmental collapse that is being foreseen. Let's for the moment hold that as an evolutionary driver. And I've asked myself, what could we do in 5 years to connect that which is already creative and emergent? And because we have over 6 billion cell phones, because the planet has grown a new nervous system through which we can communicate, I would just like to say, B2 and Wendy and Michael, that we should be aiming that within 5 years, the voices of the positive potential for humanity are the chorus heard around the world. And the words of in this book, The Great Disruption, is, it's a once in a civilization opportunity to shift the culture from top-down separated economic type growth to co-creative culture, a once-in-a-civilization opportunity in the next 5 years. So I want you all to know how happy I am to be part of this. Thank you, Barbara Fields and Wendy and the whole New Thought group for initiating this, and I'm going to say good night now.
Good night, B1. Thank you so much for being here. Wendy?
Sure, and I would just close by saying, you know, we have a powerful, powerful teaching, and we've used it very well to improve our individual lives, and we should continue to do that. But let's use it even more broadly and widely now to change the world. Let's continue to pray, to meditate, to visualize, to move our feet, and to vote for the world in which we want to live. With every dollar that we spend, let us spend it consciously for the betterment of all.
Thank you, Wendy. You are on a crusade, and we need you. Thanks to everyone who was on the call today. We'll send you information when the, of course, free recording of this call is posted next week to the agnt.org website. The next New Thought on the News, Edition 5, will be on Thursday, October 17th at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. At that time, we'll be talking with Dr. Roger Teal of the Mile High community in Colorado and Dr. Carol Carnes from Centers for Spiritual Living. We'll email you information about that program. The numbers that you use today will stay good for the whole series. So once again, thanks to all of you for engaging in the discussion and for all the hard work you're doing in your own lives. And we'll just open up the mics, and on the count of three, we can all say goodnight to each other. And thank you. We'll hear you next time. Here we go. One, two, and three.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.